Ty James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, I almost got caught off guard here. I was chatting away with people on a couple of different chat rooms, and my goodness, look up at the clock, and ooh, time to go. Hey, how are all of you? Having a good week so far? I sure am, and I hope you are as well. I hope it's... Hope it's beautiful where you are, up north, up that way. You folks are experiencing fall weather. The leaves are falling, and I guess you're probably just at the peak of the leaves turning color and all that sort of thing. That's always nice, I guess. And down here, the palm trees don't change or anything. It's just kind of the same old, but it does look beautiful. Got a lot to talk about today. We've got a couple of very good guests lined up for you today. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to have Glenn Greenwald, one of the Internet's very finest bloggers. I'm sure most of you know that. Glenn's going to be with us to discuss some things. And we also are going to have Vic Camber, very popular, very well-known, long-time Democratic strategist. He's going to be with us at the top of the next hour. So good to have all of you along with us. It'll be good to talk to those two guests. Much to speak about. Here we are only 1 week away. 1 week away from Election Day. What's it going to be? And we'll be talking to Glenn and Vic about both of those things, what our predictions are going to be. I don't know. It's too close to call. I think the House is looking pretty good for us. The Senate, too close to call. Could go either way. We could end up with one or two seat majority in the Senate if things go right. We could end up with one or two seats under the majority if things don't go right. So we only hope things will go right. We hope that the voting is legit. Hope people... You know, I had to call the local election board today. Called and asked them what's the law on electioneering signs at the polls. And, of course, they know the law, but, you know, they don't enforce it. They got the election, you know, at the early voting places that we have here in our county. They've got electioneering signs right outside the door. I mean, 2 feet from the door, and it's supposed to be a minimum of 100 feet away. But they don't. Hey, this is Florida. What do you expect? And in Florida and Ohio, don't expect the vote to go right. Don't expect it. Well, we've got two big things coming up in November. My God, I'll tell you what, for people from Ohio, especially Ohio State Buckeye fans, and no, Sarge, I can't go the whole show without mentioning the Buckeyes. We've got the election coming up, which is the more important thing, coming up a week from today, and then Ohio State is going to be playing Michigan. Looks like it's going to be number one against number two. National championship ramifications on that for all you folks that don't give a damn about football. Put up with me anyway because it's an exciting time of the year. Anytime the Buckeyes and those people from up north get together, why, it's always a good time, and it'll be a rocking time in the old stadium again this year. Always you can remember that. You know, a lot of people come up, even Ohio folks ask me, where's the game this year? Where's the Ohio State Michigan game this year? And on the even years, it's at the even place. On the odd years, it's at the odd place. And, of course, the odd place is Ann Arbor, Michigan. So don't forget that. There we go. 5 minutes after the hour. Love to hear from you today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We've got a lot to talk about today. We'll try and get in-depth on some of the Senate races. Some of them are just too close to call. Polls everywhere. And don't know what to make of them. Some of them, you take Tennessee, for example. You know, I see a couple of polls now that have Ford ahead. I see at least one poll. I think it's Rasmussen that's got Webb ahead in Virginia. I even see that it looks like possibly, if things go right, that things could be in play in Arizona. That is a possibility as well. So it's going to be extremely interesting. It's going to be a nail-biter. I'm sure a lot of us are going to be up all night long next week. And it'll be, just incredible. That's what it's going to be. We've got Kenny Boy Melman. We want to talk about him a little bit. You know how he was making fun of Harold Ford for taking money from the porn industry? Well, it turns out that Kenny Boy Melman and the RNC have accepted political contributions from the gay porn king. That's right. Last week, you'll remember the RNC, headed by Kenny Melman, was running that race-baiting bimbo ad against Representative Harold Ford down in Tennessee. Well, one of the barbs in that ad was the claim that Ford had taken political contributions from porn movie producers. But it seems there's lots of porn movie producer money to go around. It turns out that the RNC, that's the Republican National Committee, the folks with the family values, you know. The family values. Claiming they're holier than thou or better than everybody. It seems that they're regular recipients of political contributions from Nicholas T. Boyas, the owner and CEO of Marina Pacific Distributors, one of the largest producers and distributors of gay porn in the United States. This recent article on Marina Pacific's new market campaign from XBiz, a porn industry trade sheet, notes that in addition to producing its own material, the company, quote, acts as a distribution house for hundreds of lines, mostly gay, 40 of which can be purchased only through MPD. And the company is a trendsetter in the industry. So latest films by these people that are giving money to the Republicans called the gay porn things called Fire in the Hole, Flesh and Boners, and Velvet Mafia. Boy is a contributor to the RNC three times in 2004, two times in 2005. So, hypocritical, of course. What else did you expect? What possibly else did you expect? We'll go into some of that more a little bit later. Where do we want to go with this today? Have you noticed all the ads? Have you been keeping up with the ads? Have you seen them on YouTube and all around the internet, Media Matters and so forth, all the negative ad taking place? And guess who 90% of it, more than 90%, guess who most all of it's coming from? Guess what direction it's coming from? The desperation. Negative ads? Desperation, you say? Maybe. Maybe not. I hope the public notices what the Republicans have been doing these past few weeks. I hope they can see that these slimy, hypocritical bastards are just bare in their teeth and giving the voters a wide-open view of just how mean, nasty, and reprehensible their party really is right now. I'm talking about the modern-day Republican Party. I'm talking, of course, about the ads that they've been running. The individual Republican candidates have lowered themselves even further into the political cesspool of dirty tricks and dishonest ads. But the folks over at the RNC, for you neophytes, that's the Republican National Committee, led by Ken Melman, they've outdone themselves and have not been surprised I learned a long time ago that when you back a rat into a corner, he's going to come out fighting. And there's never been a more desperate gang of rats than the present-day Republican National Committee. Now, there are people like Joe Klein, and I know you know who Joe Klein is. You see him all over TV nowadays. From Time Magazine. They're writing articles stating that the Republicans are only acting like this because they're facing the prospect of major political ass-kicking. And Joe Klein writes, and I quote him, "In recent weeks, the Republicans unwrapped another moldy chestnut, advertisements proclaiming that Democrats will raise taxes." That old one again. But that didn't seem to be working either because voters were focused mainly on Iraq and Mark Foley. And so last week, the Republicans unleashed a series of ads painting the Democrats as sex-crazed, homosexual-loving, porn-perusing, and in the case of the novelist and Virginia Senate candidate Jim Webb, porn-writing perverts. It was vivid proof that the prospect of a hanging doesn't always concentrate the mind. Sometimes it leads to feral piss-pants desperation. And over at the Washington Post, Michael Grunwald writes, and I quote, "The result has been a carnival of ugly, especially on the GOP side, where operatives are trying to counter what polls show is a hostile political environment by casting opponents as fatally flawed characters. The National Republican Campaign Committee is spending more than 90% of its advertising budget on negative ads, according to GOP operatives, and the rest of the party seems to be following suit." I like that phrase, carnival of ugly. It describes the typical Republican campaign, and I do mean typical. Even campaigns they're winning are marked by sleazy, below-the-belt political obscenities like the Swift voters and their ilk. But the way I see it, where Klein and Grunwald are completely wrong, is that the current RNC, that's the Republican National Committee, where the RNC campaign is absolutely typical of all of their races. They'll sink to the lowest common denominator, winning or losing. It's how they do things. And where I differ between Klein and Grunwald, this is not because they're desperate right now. It's because they don't know how to do it any other way. No other way. This is nothing new. I think back to the Willie Horton ads dreamed up by the late Lee Atwater and their vicious attacks on Bill Clinton during that campaign. And, of course, the Swift voters for truth. So, really, desperation has nothing to do with it. It's their way of doing things. It's the party of moral values, of family values, the party of all that's good and decent, to hear them tell it. It's the very righteous, supremely patriotic party of God. It's the Republicans' way of doing things. And it wouldn't matter one bit if they were out in front of each and every race by double digits. They would still be sloshing around in the gutter coming up with the most vile, disgusting, immoral ads possible. And it wouldn't matter what the circumstances, they would still be sinking to the lowest common denominator because it's not desperation. That is how they operate. It's the true indication of who they are and what they are. I'm not saying that no Democrat has run nasty ads. What I am saying is that if you look at things across the board, you will see that time after time and time again, the Republicans are seeking to appeal to everyone's worst instincts, and they've succeeded by doing so. And that success in the past has inspired him to reach for even lower tactics during each succeeding election. The plain truth is that if you can separate yourself from radical partisanship for a moment, it is plain for everyone to see that the Republicans own the realm of dirty political ads. They've brought them to a new level, a level that decent people would not even suggest, let alone carry out. And let me go back just a little bit. Soon after I started this program, almost 4 years ago, Some local Republicans warned me and warned others that they would get me off the air by any means necessary. I'm quoting them, any means necessary. And I thought that was just a couple of radical renegade Republicans talking. And later on, I learned that it was absolutely typical of Republican Party tactics and behavior. It's just their way of doing things. It's not desperation. Win or lose, they engage in the dirtiest political advertising and tactics known to the modern world, and they have the money to do it. And far more disturbing is the fact that they have the will to do it. And what's most unsettling about it is that they don't have the ability to see the evil in it. Their advertising tactics show the true nature of the modern-day Republican Party. Dirty, evil, downright shameful. And the fact is, there aren't enough proper words to describe the political climate inside the Republican Party today. Just filthy tactics. Filthy tactics. But they're not adverse to doing it whatsoever. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, Guy, this is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
You know, I could talk to you about several different things, but I want to go into this election thing. You know, right here in Mississippi, with Trent Lott and his home county being in a state of, well, let's just call it what it is, a police state. This guy has so many doors open for someone just to run through and just kick his butt all over the place. And the sad part is our candidate is not doing it. In fact, he is his own worst enemy.
Yeah, he's Fleming's behind 66% to 29%.
And you know what, Guy, I have set the man up. I've arranged interviews with him, with Mike Malloy, with Bob Kincaid, and I've had him set up to where he could go into the worst areas of Katrina and get and talk to the people and really just make a big major difference, and he just refused to do it.
Let me ask you, Sarge, are the people affected by Katrina, are they really and truly thinking about politics, and are they thinking that they're dissatisfied with the Republicans, or are they going to be lemmings and march to the sea again?
Well, you know, this is the really sad part. I have had so many of them down there tell me, get Fleming down here. If you'll get Fleming down here, by God, we'll vote for him. Hmm. And, you know, I've told him and I begged him. I've sent him emails. I've called him on the phone and everything. And I have told him, if you will get down there, I guarantee you, you can carry Jackson County. Just go talk to these people. And he just will not do it. Hmm. He will not do it. Now, he goes down there. But he goes down there and he goes into the black community around Moss Point, and he doesn't come out of it. He stays with them. He doesn't come out and talk to the white people who are having problems. And I keep telling him, great, get your black vote. I'm all for that, you know. But get out of there and get you some white votes too, because these people are dying for somebody to stand up and show some leadership. And instead what I'm getting is, okay, look, we've asked Fleming, we've begged him to come, he will not come, so we are staying home on election day because neither one of them are worth, I'm going to say it, pissing on.
Yeah. Well,
the people are extremely unhappy with Lott. They are disappointed that Fleming has refused to speak up and step up to the plate and show some leadership skills. And to be honest with you, I've even gotten to the point where I'm not really sure that I'm going to be able to vote for him without at least holding my nose pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Gene Taylor, of course, he isn't doing a thing. In fact, I would say, congratulations, Gene. You need an R behind your name. I mean, it's just so pathetic. And I have I've talked to so many different congressmen and senators. I've talked to John Conyers' office. Today I talked to Ted Kennedy's office, and these people are showing an interest. They want to come down here, and there's a good chance that Ted Kennedy may actually show up in the area. John Conyers might. And I can't even get Eric Fleming to go from Moss Point to Goshen.
Well, if I were down 66 to 29 right now, I think I'd just stop spending money and stay home. His campaign is over with. He has no chance now. He should have done his work earlier than this.
Well, you know, if I'd known he was going to do this, there's no way I could have possibly won. But just to give the people an alternative, I would have thrown in as a write-in candidate. Just to say, here, you guys don't have a choice. I'll just throw my name in, and then you can waste your vote on me, you know.
Well, the thing is, Sarge, can a real Democrat get elected in the South?
Yes. Yes, they can.
I mean, show me where there is one. That's what I'm asking here.
Okay, I can show you some. Oh, well, all right, he's not much of a Democrat, and I'll grant you that. But Gene Taylor is a Democrat, all right? You have this woman in Louisiana. What's her name? The one that voted.
Well, I said real Democrat.
Oh, well, a real Democrat.
Mary Landrieu, she's not a Democrat by any stretch.
Well, yeah, I agree with you totally there. But, yeah, I think they could win, especially in Mississippi, if they can sell themselves on the Mississippi coast, if they can sell themselves outside of the Mississippi Delta. Now, the Delta is an area that you might as well just write off. The Delta will never vote for anything but a racist, low-down, dirty, stinking dog, because that's what they love. But now you get into these other parts around Tupelo, around Jackson, around Gulfport, Biloxi, those areas, yes, you have a chance.
Well, I...
In fact, I'll tell you what, Bob, I even went this far. I turned around to Eric when I first started conversing with him, and I said, if you will get Mudcat Sanders connected up to where he can talk to William Winter.
You mean Mudcat up in Virginia?
Right.
Yeah.
Mudcat had agreed that if he would set him up to where he could talk with William Winter, because he has met Winters, and he said, if he will set me up, I will manage Fleming's campaign. Mm. And you know, that dirty, stinking dog would not set him up with a conversation.
Hmm.
And I mean, tell me, who better you going to get in the South to run your campaign as a Democrat than Mudcat?
That's right.
And I am so disgusted, Guy. I don't know what to do. I am so ready to get out of this area.
Well, you're just going to have to grin and bear it and hope the rest of the nation pulls it through, Sarge. And
oh, man, I'm counting on you guys outside the side, right? Because, I mean, these people down here, I'm not going into it because I know you got other things to do, but the people are suffering so bad, especially in Jackson County, that somebody's got to do something to save it.
Well, it's you know, here we are in the middle of an election cycle, and it's the well, how else can you say it? It's a forgotten disaster.
I tell you what, there's only been three people. Now, I called Kerry's office today and tried to get them involved, and they brushed me off. They wasn't interested. And so, you know, I told the guy, I said, well, you know, I raised $5,000 for Kerry. I was a super moderator at his forum, and I supported him with everything I had. And you know what? I'm sorry I did, and I hung up on the guy.
Hmm.
So, I mean, there you go. Okay, I'm going to let you go, and hey, we're going to talk about that prescription turf.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, bye-bye.
See ya. Ah, yes. Well, it's a different world in the South. Here in Florida, it's a little bit different. Florida's a purple state. I've never the oddity of the situation is that although Florida is the southernmost state in America, it's really not the South. Perhaps up in the Big Bend area. That's the part up there where it bends and heads out toward the Panhandle. That's South right there. That's as redneck, hardcore redneck as you can get up in there, up in the Tallahassee area and That's, oh boy, what an area that is. That's up in the area where Rosewood is. And if any of you have seen the movie Rosewood, you would understand why, well, you would understand. If you haven't seen the movie Rosewood, please do, if you can stand it. You understand what I'm talking about that particular area of the country. But it is a forgotten disaster, Katrina is. You know, we had the one-year anniversary here a while back in August, and the White House launched this big public relations blitz, and President Bush promised to make sure that this good area recovers. And by the next week, the attention had largely faded. And currently, in the week before the midterm elections, there aren't any candidates focusing on Katrina's reconstruction. No, it is forgotten. The nation needs to do more than simply have a commemoration of the people who died there. They need to have an honest-to-God program where something is really done instead of paying lip service. You know, there's survivors from that horrible disaster all over this country, spread out all over this country, and a whole lot of them are unable to return to their homes on the Gulf Coast. And those who do face a total lack of basic services. There's hundreds of Katrina evacuees have died since that thing happened because of health issues, putting the real death toll well over 2,000. And there's something like 90,000, close to 90,000 square miles down there that was affected by this. $80 billion, as I recall, in damages. About 600,000 people were displaced from that area. And the last I saw, I believe New Orleans was, and we always talk about New Orleans, and people forget about the rest of the place. They forget that place is 57% smaller, 56 or 57, I believe is the number, smaller than it was. There's just somewhere around 175,000, 180,000 residents of the place is all that's left, considerably smaller than it was. And the people that have gone back face a lack of essential services. I believe something like 50% of the doctors and nurses have left the entire area. 50%. So you know they don't have good health care anymore. And out of the 10 or 11 hospitals that they had, I believe only two have reopened. So what kind of health care are you going to have there? Health insurance. Considerable number of the people there don't have health insurance. And the schools. I think somewhere in the neighborhood of, as I recall, 125, 130 schools, something like only about 60 of them have reopened. How can that be? How can it be that in this, the wealthiest nation in the world, here we are having an election with people talking about all the earmarks and all the great things that they've done for the states, that their politicians, their senators, and their representatives and so forth. How can they go out and brag, the people of that area go out and brag what they've done for their people? How can the rest of them brag about what they've done for the common man where there sets a place on the Gulf Coast that's literally decaying right before our eyes and nothing is being done about it? Nothing. I think right now we probably just better stop for a little break here. I think we'll do that, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
There's a hole in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a hole in the world tonight. Don't let there be a hole in the world tomorrow. They say that anger is just love disappointed. They say that love is just a state of mind. But all this fighting over who is anointed. Oh, how can people be so blind?
There's a hole in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a
Here we are back with you at the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Lively bunch here. I see on a couple of different chat rooms. Hello to all the folks over at the Head On Radio Network chat room. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. As promised, I told you I was going to bring you one of the best bloggers and the best authors on the entire internet, and we've got him with you today. We've got Glenn Greenwald with us. Glenn, are you with us?
I am. Good to be here.
Hey, thanks. We last talked to Glenn back at the, what was it called? Bring Back some conference.
Bring Back America.
There you go. I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, at a conference in Washington, and that was at a time I think you were riding high on your book, What Would a Patriot Do? And you're working on another book now?
I am. It's going to be released probably April or May of this coming year, and it's sort of a character study of the president and how that's affected his presidency and the way that he's governed.
Oh, a character study of this president. That should be.
There's a lot of rich material there.
Well, I should say there is. Most interesting. Where do you start on something like that?
Well, you know, I think that one of the interesting things that happened with this presidency was, and it was obviously a byproduct of circumstance and coincidence, but the September 11th attacks gave the president the opportunity to really achieve great things for the country, I think. And the opportunity was there to unite Americans in a sense of purpose and unity that has been lacking for a long time. And there was an instinct, the instincts that he had that I thought were appropriate for the moment, and he gave into his worst instincts instead. Instead of, you know, seizing the moment and uniting the country, he used it as an opportunity to exploit it for political gain and to sort of institutionalize a radical agenda. And so, you know, I think it's a nuanced picture. I don't think the president is, you know, a cartoon villain or a purely evil figure. I think it's a little more complex than that. But, you know, I think it's worth examining sort of how we've gotten to the point that we're at.
Well, that's, you know, that's interesting. I've often wondered, not knowing the man personally, and I'll never get a chance to. I've wondered, is he a product of this presidential environment he's been in, or are we a product now of our nation? Are we a product of his policies and procedures that he's had naturally all along? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. Glenn, you've got... Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a consensus that however he began, he is now at a point, you know, in every way, in terms of politically and psychologically and emotionally, where he's at the very far end of the radical spectrum and has been taken there by, you know, his closest aides who have really influenced him. So however he got there, I think there's a consensus that that's where he got, and that's the reason why our country is in such danger.
Well, there's such a paradox there. We hear on the one hand that he's hard-headed, stubborn, and just won't give in. And on the other hand, we hear that, well, he's been radically influenced by the religious right and has taken their lead on many things. How do you explain that?
Well, you know, I think, and part of the theme of the book that I'm working on is that central to the president's life is the moment when he was born again and became an evangelical Christian. And he's a fundamentalist, and in every sense of the word, he's convinced that his political views aren't just right, that he is fighting on the side of good. And so once you begin with that premise, things like facts that suggest that maybe you're not pursuing the right course, or dissenting views, or the need to make common cause with your opponents who are on the other side, all become, you know, essentially irrelevant because he believes that he is on a crusade for good. And I think that explains so much of why he picks a course and never looks back. He sticks with it even when it becomes apparent that it's a failure. I think he believes in some sense that there's almost a destiny to his presidency that ultimately will be vindicated no matter what, because from the beginning he's on the side of good and he's fighting evil.
Well, I think we could talk all afternoon about that. You and I have got a little bit different take on that. I'm not so sure I want to give him that much credit. But anyway, I look forward to your next book. I really do. I love the last one. What I wanted to talk to you about mainly today, I got off on sidetrack there a little bit. What I would like to know is when I'm taking a lot for granted. If the Democrats were win the House back this time, and I know you've done some writing on this subject. If they take it back this time, we have Nancy Pelosi talking about, well, no, there's not going to be any impeachment, and we have many Democrats talking, downplaying the fact that there may be a plethora of investigations take place and so forth. Do you think, really and truly, the Democrats will be able to resist just digging in with the, you know, with their digging in their heels and going after these guys for all the in many cases, criminal acts and the other ones downright unethical acts that have taken place in this Republican administration. People like John Conyers want to go after them, and we've heard Nancy Pelosi talking all this down. Where do you stand on all this?
No, I don't think they're going to resist. I don't think they're going to even try to resist those investigations. I mean, those committee chairmen, and you mentioned John Conyers, but also Henry Waxman and John Dingell, and then several others who would be in a position to take over as committee chairman in the House and therefore have subpoena power, and also people like Pat Leahy in the Senate, are chomping at the bit, as well they should be, to start tearing down the wall of secrecy behind which this administration has operated for the last 5 years. You know, Nancy Pelosi goes out of her way to say that they will not conduct or commence impeachment proceedings, but that is not their intent, because I think there's a sense that with 2 years left in the Bush presidency, that impeachment would be a great distraction and wouldn't accomplish much, because you know, the best you could hope for is you would put Cheney as president unless you impeached him too. So I think she's just trying to allay concerns about the country being consumed by impeachment proceedings. But there's no question, and I think it's by far the biggest appeal of a Democratic takeover of either of the houses, is that finally we will have some accountability. Finally there will be some serious investigation about what has been going on with our government for the past 5 years, and I don't think there's any question that that will happen.
Well, I think sometimes the public has trouble understanding if there are a bunch of investigations that take place. I think many of these people are very fair-minded, and it'll be for the good of the country that they do this, not necessarily partisan politics. I don't think a lot of people want to, especially on the right, want to let it sink in that what if we had a Democrat take power in the Oval Office and sink his teeth into the, you know, the power like this White House has done. It would be a horrible mess for them, and I think we've got a horrible mess in this nation right now, and we've got to get it cleared up and let further, you know, future administrations know that they're not going to be able to do this again.
Right. I mean, the fundamental principle, the starting point for a functioning democracy is an informed citizenry, and you have to have the population be aware of what their government is doing, and obviously there are some exceptions when true national security implications are at play, but secrecy, even before September 11th, has been the guiding principle of this administration. Combine that with the fact that their allies in Congress have willingly helped them to conceal what they've been doing, and you have a population that really knows very little about what the government has done in the last 5 years. And, you know, if at the end of the day the Americans are fully aware of what this administration has been doing, and is tolerant of it, and is willing to accept it and endorse it, so be it. That's what a democracy is. But what you have to have in order to is just basic information first and foremost, and that's what we have lacked completely over the course of this administration.
Do you think the Democrats, via committees and information coming out, do you think they can convince the public and make it completely aware to the public that this is not political, but this is something we have to do for the good of the nation, that to make sure that people are informed and not make it look like a terrible partisan thing?
Oh, I absolutely do. You know, one of the things that I noticed a lot when, and I noticed this when I did my book tour, and I notice this every day when I write on my blog, is, you know, there's kind of a frustration on the part of critics of this administration, and sort of the sense of, oh, the Americans are just too apathetic or too easily manipulated, and they don't really care what's going on as long as they get to watch television and be satisfied. And, you know, if you look at public opinion polls, there has really been a seismic shift in the way that this president and the government is perceived. People do not trust this president by huge margins, and his party and his supporters. And that hasn't happened because the media has done its job. They haven't. Or because Congress has exposed anything. They've come to that conclusion on their own. Just they realize just how extremist and corrupt this government is. And polls show that people want accountability, including investigations. Have there been contracts in Iraq that were awarded to cronies and have cost the country billions of dollars? How did we end up selling Americans on a war based on one false pretense after the next? Who's responsible for that? How did that really happen? People want answers to those questions, and I think the more information that's relevant, that's revealed, the more they'll want to keep digging.
Well, something interesting has taken place. You're talking about a seismic shift, and I think there's been a seismic shift take place within the Republican Party, actually. I read with interest the piece that Peggy Noonan, my God, of all people, Peggy Noonan, of what she wrote recently about jumping ship, and we have people like William F. Buckley and Bill Kristol. Are these people? I guess the point is, are they sincere in wanting to better America, or are they laying plans for the next election by jumping ship off of this one and getting on another boat?
Well, you know, I think there's some of both. I mean, clearly there have been conservatives who, much earlier on than, you know, 2006, have been saying that this presidency has gone wildly off course and that they're governing inconsistently with conservative principles, because they've grown the government, they've made government interfere in every aspect of our lives. The war in Iraq is there's nothing conservative about it. You know, you've had people like Pat Buchanan and William Buckley and lots of people like that, sort of older fashioned conservatives who have rejected this administration. So there's some genuine dissatisfaction about what this president has done. But I think that, you know, one thing to be very careful of is there's a phrase that has sort of taken on conventional wisdom of late, which is conservatism never fails, it is only failed. Meaning, you know, any politician or president or political figure who claims to be a conservative who doesn't fail, it's never because conservatism itself failed, it's because they failed conservatism by not being sufficiently conservative. And I think that what's going on is the president, everyone can see, is wildly unpopular. And so what a lot of this jumping ship is about is to be able to, in 2008, say, this time you should elect a real conservative. George Bush wasn't a real conservative. We said early on that he violated all of the principles of conservatism. If you want to make the country better, if you want a better president than George Bush, elect a real conservative this time. They're trying to cut off the rotting head in order to save the fish, I think is the best way to look at it.
That's a good way to put it. The highway always goes the right direction. It's just that this one, they've gotten off the conservative highway, and there's nothing wrong with the road. It's just that they've gotten off of it. I think maybe we have a question for you from one of our callers. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for Glenn?
Yes, Guy, it's Dave in Northern California. And Glenn, you're not the only person that shares the belief that this president sees himself as nobly motivated. But I must say that I don't see an element of that, not even a hint. I'd say it would be far more likely that a bank robber or a train robber might be considered nobly motivated, because these are people who consciously are twisting everything to exploit the people, to devastate this country, the economy, and invading other countries for their own personal profit. Now, how does somebody like that justify that. This psychopath.
Yeah, you know, I mean, nobody can know for sure what is motivating somebody else. All you can do is speculate. But some of the most brutal and evil people throughout history believed that they were justified in what they were doing. To say that someone believes that they're justified or believes in a philosophy that provides a rationalization for what they're doing is not in any way to mitigate the evil of what it is that they're doing. It's simply to say that they have adopted a set of principles, a set of beliefs, that gives them a method for believing that they're right. And that makes them more dangerous, because if you believe, for example, that you're doing God's work in Iraq, then no set of facts will persuade you that you've made a mistake because you believe that you are on the side of good and the side of what is just. Then you can say, well, that's not why he invaded Iraq. He invaded Iraq because he wanted control over oil, or because he wanted to satisfy a psychological desire to compete with his father, or it was a way to control the population. And those things can all be debated. We all have our own views on what motivates a particular person, and in my view, George Bush is a fundamentalist personality type, an authoritarian fundamentalist personality type, who believes that whatever it is that he does is by definition right because he is on the side of good.
Well, and Glenn, I think one of the odd situations is here, we have this discussion taking place, this national discussion taking place on what we need to do in Iraq, and basically that discussion is how are we going to get out of there with some honor and some dignity and so forth. And here we have the Noonans and the Buckleys and the Crystals and these folks actually wanting to double up, throw in more troops and more military might, and really go after this thing. So there's a huge disparity. Well, I think those folks are in a vast minority, but still, they're sticking to that path, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's similar to what we talked about before. I think there's a lot of people who advocated this war who want a way to avoid being labeled as failures or having made a mistake. And what they're trying to do is say the idea of the war itself was good. It's just that it wasn't executed aggressively enough. We needed more troops. Now, the reason that's so dishonest is because it was clear from the beginning that they were going to try and fight this war with only a small number of troops. But also, we don't have more troops to send to Iraq. I mean, it's a fantasy world to say we should send another 50 or 100,000 troops to Iraq, because those troops just don't exist. So, and then that leaves aside the question of whether or not sending more troops would do anything other than, you know, massively increase the disaster and worsen the situation. But the reality is that there's only two options. One is to keep things as they are, and the other is to withdraw. And people who try to say that we should do neither of those things and that we should live in this magic fantasy world that doesn't exist, where we send in five or six more brigades and everything is magically solved, are really being irresponsible and immoral, because they know that that's not going to happen. And the only real alternative, which is withdrawal, is the one that they're afraid to accept.
Yeah, surely. And they show all kinds of signs of that. Glenn, you're working on a new book now. It takes a while to write a book. Is it something you sit down and do every day, or is it something do you set hours for yourself, or do you only sit down and do it when the spirit moves you, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, the first book that I wrote, the one that was on your show for the last time, was written in a very short period of time, in 2.5 months, because we wanted to make sure that it was part of the ongoing debate over the president's lawlessness. And so that I wrote, you know, every day, 8 hours a day. This book is a longer-term project, and I have the luxury of being able to do a lot of research for it. So, you know, there are days when I just don't want to write, and then there are other days when I'm very moved to write, and will write, you know, 10 or 12 hours a day. So it's pretty sporadic based on, you know, what moves you.
I guess you're a typical author. Yeah, you have a great blog, and you obviously spend a lot of time on that blog every day, it appears to me anyway. Or do you just sit down and hammer that out in a few minutes?
Not in a few minutes, but one of the interesting things about blogs that I like the most about it is, you know, most people start blogs and maintain them. It's a lot of work, as you say, because they're very passionate about what's happening in their country and feel like they want to fight for the principles that they believe in. And so I think when you're motivated by passion, it's a lot easier to work on things, and it's sort of a lot easier. I mean, you can wake up, you know, any morning and go and read a newspaper or read an opinion column and feel a sense of outrage. And, you know, I think the hardest part each day is to figure out, to select the outrages to write about and which ones you'll want to leave out because there's just so many.
So I share that problem with you. That's the same thing I have every day. And some days you find yourself pounding those keys a little harder than you do others when you sit down and write. It's glenngreenwald.blogspot.com. It's called Unclaimed Territory. And for those of you that don't know about it, which I can't imagine that there are any of you that don't, but check it out. It's a good reading. Glenn's on there just about every day. And sometimes a couple of times a day and keeps his articles updated. It's one of the very best. Glenn, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Enjoyed it very much.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Glenn Greenwald, and actually he's speaking to us from Rio de Janeiro. How about that? There, let's see, it's backwards down there. So how's that be? They'll be going in. We're going into fall here, and they'll be going into spring there. Is that how it works? Anyway. They're a couple hours time-wise east of where we are here in the United States, so they're 2 hours ahead of us. So, I learned something about time, the time thing. Let's see, where are we here? We're about 3.5 minutes until the top of the hour. We're going to have Vic Camber on in the next hour and the next half hour. In fact, right after the news, and. We want to talk about some of these Senate races, and it's not as if maybe Vic knows a whole lot more than some of us do, but he can certainly explain the hows and whys of some of these polls, and you'll find some good information coming from Vic Camber. I know a lot of you have seen him on TV for a good long time. Vic has been a Democratic strategist. He's passionate. He's articulate. He's extremely wise when it comes to talking about excuse me, when it comes to talking about political matters. So I know you will enjoy talking to Vic Camber when he comes up. And if you have any questions, you want to call in and talk to Vic, it's 866-546-5254. You're welcome to do so. 866-546-5254. After Vic's on, we're probably going to get into a little bit through this John Kerry flap that's going on today. Interesting. And I'm very happy with him. I've read a few of you are not. I don't know why. I've read a couple of Democrats claim it's something he shouldn't have brought up. I'm fully behind him on this situation, and I'm glad to see that John Kerry is fighting back. And I hope that's a lesson that Democrats everywhere have finally learned. I think it would behoove all Democrats to follow John Kerry's lead lately here, John Edwards' lead, Howard Dean's lead, the people that are standing there digging in their heels and punching back. And I'm damn glad to see it. I'm tired of them running over us all the time like we've allowed them to do for a good long time. It's good to see somebody fight back. I don't see one thing wrong with it, not one thing wrong with it. And also, when we come back, we want to talk a little bit about the pathetic, and some of you may have a different take on it, but the pathetic Chris Matthews moderated the Florida governorship gubernatorial debate last night. Oh, my God. Oh, you think we don't have a problem here in Florida? Now, maybe you or some of you good Democrats are big Jim Davis fans. I am not. And I thought, as I watched that debate last night, I thought, oh, my God, heads you win, tails you win, or heads you lose, tails you lose. There's no way out of this. That's just the way I felt. And, right now what we're going to do is we're going to remind you that we're on the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We're going to be back after that with Vic Camber. Don't miss that. You will enjoy him. I guarantee it. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. A breakthrough in the North Korean missile crisis with the announcement today in Beijing that Pyongyang has agreed to return to six-party talks on its nuclear program. The announcement follows meetings in Beijing among representatives of North Korea, China, and the United States. Those talks are expected, the six-party talks, that is, to resume before the end of this year. Two more American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, bringing the total for October to 103. One was shot to death in West Baghdad, the other killed by a roadside bomb south of the capital, both of these yesterday. October's figure is the worst since January of 2005 and the fourth highest monthly death toll of the war. On orders from Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, the U.S. military took down its blockade of Baghdad's Sadr city today. That followed a campaign of civil disobedience that had been called by Muqtada al-Sadr, the anti-U.S. cleric who controls that sprawling neighborhood of 2.5 million people. Three NATO soldiers have been killed by a roadside bomb in eastern Afghanistan. Their nationalities not yet announced. Israeli warplanes have been flying over Beirut and southern Lebanon at low altitudes in violation of a UN resolution. But Israel says those flyovers will continue to make sure that weapons are not being smuggled into Lebanon from Syria. In the Gaza Strip, Israel troops have killed two Hamas militants and wounded seven other Palestinians. In Pakistan, protests by 15,000 tribesmen against the U.S. and the Pakistani government are continuing today near the Afghan border. That's where a Pakistani helicopter attack on a religious school killed 80 people yesterday. The government says they were militants. Protesters say they were students, most of them young men under the age of 25. Following 5 months of protest against the governor of Oaxaca, Mexico, who's been accused of corruption, the Mexican Congress is now calling for him to resign in order to restore order. Over the weekend, federal troops were sent in to clear the city center of demonstrators following the deaths there of three people last Friday, including an American filmmaker. Rescue operations are underway in western China, where at least 35 miners are trapped following an underground explosion in a coal mine. The Homeland Security Department reports that arrests of illegal immigrants are down 8% in the past year. Southern California's arson-caused wildfire now fully contained after burning more than 60 square miles of brush and timber and killing four firefighters. And if you want to live where big-time college football is played, your best bet is Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's the most affordable college town in the U.S., followed by Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and Muncie, Indiana. Most expensive, Palo Alto, California, home to Stanford. Next is L.A., which is home to both USC and UCLA. This is the Quality News Network, Science and Business, coming up.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
NASA has changed its mind and now says it will send a space shuttle crew on a mission to repair the Hubble telescope, probably in May of 2008. Without repairs, scientists say it would only last a few more years. With repairs, Hubble should continue to operate until at least 2013. British scientists say they've been able to grow tiny sections of human liver by using stem cells from umbilical cords. They hope to use the mini livers in drug tests, but say it will be decades before they're able to grow a liver that can be used in human transplant operations. The wages and benefits of American workers rose during the third quarter of this year at its fastest pace in more than 2 years. Labor Department says its employment cost index was up 1%. On the other hand, the Conference Board reports that consumers' confidence in the economy fell in October, largely due to worries about jobs. United Airlines posting another quarterly profit, the second in a row. Its net earnings were $190 million. Microsoft is suing 55 dealers in 10 countries, charging them with pirating counterfeit software online. And more trouble for Sony. The U.S. Justice Department has launched an antitrust probe into the company's sales of its static random access memory chips. Gold is trading at $606 an ounce at this hour. Silver's at $12.27. And light sweet crude down a dollar, trading at $57.36 a barrel. All the markets are down on Wall Street. The Dow is lower by 35 points at 12,052. NASDAQ down 2 at 2362. And the S&P 500 is lower by 3 at 1375. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you back with us here. You heard the news at the top of the hour. Nothing earth-shaking, I guess. No, definitely nothing earth-shaking, so you can relax. No big disasters this hour. Hey, glad to have all of you with us this afternoon, and as promised, I promise you we'd have a great guest coming up this hour, and we do. We've got somebody who I think is just the best doggone political analyst on that we ever see on TV, and most definitely the best one we have on our side of the aisle, Vic Camber. Vic, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. That's very complimentary, and I probably should get off the air now because all I could do is screw up that introduction.
Okay, we'll see you. Thanks for... No, I'm serious.
Well, thank you.
I like it. Too many times we see some of our Democratic strategists and Democratic consultants and so forth on the tube. And sometimes, in my opinion, they just lay down for people. And I noticed that you never do that. And
well, I appreciate that. I've always said I'll probably never get an ulcer. I hope I can give a few to some people, but I do let it all out.
Well, you do, and you give more than you get, and I appreciate
you.
That. We're in an amazing amazing political climate right now, I think, good and bad. It's exciting for one thing, I think, and we've got a lot of tremendous races coming up. And on the other hand, I'm not so excited about all the rancor and negativism that's taking place right now. How do you feel about the negative campaigns that are taking place in the negative ads?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, part of me, I am a history buff, and I actually wrote a book 8 or 10 years ago about negative advertising, which has gotten, it seems, worse, called
Poison Politics. Yeah, Poison Politics, okay. Yeah.
And the reality is, if people really knew that years and years ago, in the early part of our country, negative advertising was the norm. I mean, to talk about somebody having illegitimate children or having mistresses or being gay or gambling, I mean, those were things of the norm. The difference was the method of communications was so difficult. I mean, it was printed in newspapers or leafleting. Today, if you burp, it's on television 5 minutes later and everybody knows about it. And so we're able to, you know, get all this negative, or we're able to see this negative stuff so instantly, and it is disturbing. I mean, I live in a media market that has 5 or 6 races, and I can't wait for the food commercials to come back, because all I'm getting is 4 or 5 commercials, 4 of which are negative, 1 is positive, about any of these candidates. And you don't learn much, is the worst part of it. You don't learn much about people.
It's so true. So many people in some of these races know a hell of a lot more about the opponent than they do about their actual candidate.
Absolutely.
And that's such a shame. I've seen ads that are nothing. The entire ad, and I know you've seen these as well, doesn't even mention your candidate. It's a complete 60-second ad, negative against the other guy.
Absolutely, and the worst part, I mean, is, and everyone, you watch these shows, and I've probably been as guilty saying it, the only reason you do it is because to some extent they do work. In 30 seconds or 60 seconds, how do you get a message across? You want to talk about tax policy or the infrastructure or health care in America, tough to do, but you want to tell about, you know, somebody going to a Playboy club or somebody smoking marijuana or something, that's easy to do in 30 seconds and paints a picture of your opponent as something less than that whole human being you think you should be electing.
And it's a whole lot harder to fight back.
It's much tougher. Although I give the Democrats in particular this time credit for really fighting back very, very hard, very quick. And I gather Senator Schumer, Chuck Schumer, as chairman of the Senate Campaign Committee, made it one of the caveats to supporting candidates that they were required to respond to negative ads within 24 hours or he would pull their funding from their campaign.
Ooh. Well, that's
so he is demanding that the people react, because, again, we know that leaving a negative ad sitting out there only can hurt you.
Well, Vic, I agree. And I think we've been guilty of allowing that to happen in the past. And I sure hope we've learned our lesson on it.
I do, too. And let me just also say one thing, because I I'm partisan. You know I'm a Democrat and so forth. But I also, Democrats do this. I mean, the system is broken in the sense that both parties do rely on negative advertising, and that's the shame. But I don't know how you change it right now. I mean, I've thought to myself, let's get over this election and let's talk about the future. But the future's not going to change in the sense of the way we campaign, the way we advertise, because people are going to say it's been effective this way.
It's a soundbite world, and I guess it's going to stay that way. Hey, let's get into the meat of some of these races around the country right now, and your predictions or your thoughts on them. Let's start with one that's right there in your area with Webb and Allen. How do you see that going?
Very close. If you were forcing me to bet money, it's hard for me to see George Allen losing, but right now he's behind in the polls, and I think if the election were today, he loses. Do I think that there is going to be a groundswell in the rural areas? Maybe, but I think today he's down 3 to 4 points.
Yeah, I saw the only one I saw today was Rasmussen. It had actually had Webb down 1 point, but who knows? That's well within the margin there. And let's move down to one of the bordering states there. How about Harold Ford and Corker?
There's no one who's run a better race in this country than Harold Ford. From everything I've seen and read and heard, we know that there is this underlying voter—I don't know what the proper word is—that will not tell you the truth about polling. When they actually go to the polls, they vote for African American candidates slightly less than they'll tell you publicly. It's about an even race today. Again, if you're asking me to spend my money betting, I guess I think Corker is going to pull it out, but I don't underrate Ford. He's run such a phenomenal campaign.
How about in Missouri, Talon and McCaskill?
I think McCaskill wins. I think that even though the polls show it's come even again, she was up 4 points, then it's become even. I think in the end she wins from everything I'm hearing.
Montana?
Burns has made it a closer race. This is one of those states where, frankly, this Republican turnout could make a difference, believe it or not. But I think Tester wins. The majority of newspapers in the states have endorsed Tester. Burns has just made too many gaffes, too many mistakes. But the Republicans are pouring money into the state now, and again, because it's such a small state where the turnout could make all the difference, their 1% or 2% turnout could make a difference for Burns, but I think Tester wins.
Well, that's a lot of driving for the people in those states to get
yes,
at everybody.
Yes, it is.
You're talking about that last 72-hour Republican machine there. Where
correct.
Ready. Yeah.
I mean, what's happened right now in terms of Republicans, and this is, again, where I take my hat off to them. If you look at the newspaper, because of the bully pulpit of the president, the vice president, because of the attention that the cabinet gets and Karl Rove gets, you keep hearing that there's this turnaround by Republicans, yet or that there's comeback. You don't see it truly in the polls, and while in any one race somebody may be coming back, it's like that little Dutch boy with the finger in the dike. While you put one finger to stop it, three other holes appear. Today, there were at least 50 House seats in play. So we could talk about three House seats that may have come back for Republicans, but six more have opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Senate, while it's still the same four or five seats that we've been talking about for the last 5 or 6 weeks, really virtually the races are going to tighten up. There's no doubt about it. But they're still right now playing in favor of the Democrats. Even the one Democratic seat that was in jeopardy, Menendez, today looks like he's pulled it out.
Well, and I think that one of the sleepers here, and I mean, I realize there's a little bit of a difference here right now, but one that was, I think, absolutely in the bag for the Republicans is Arizona. I think Peterson's made a race out of that, and it's not entirely outside the realm of possibility that he might be able to have a late surge there and win that.
I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that, that no one's even talking about is the general factor that there's always a surprise someplace. In the state of Florida, the governor's race, I mean, while Crist was ahead 10, 12, 15 points throughout most of this cycle, from all I'm hearing, the Davis has pulled it within 5 or 6 points. Not that anyone right now expects Davis to win, but it's closed up, and who knows?
Maryland looks in pretty good shape.
Maryland, I think both the Senate race, the Cardin wins, although I give Steele credit. He's come closer. There's somebody, again, like Ford, who has run an excellent campaign. His ads have been exceptional, the Steele ads. They're different. They look like Target food store ads. They're very positive, very bright, very up. And Steele comes off as a very nice human being. When you realize where his positions are, and Maryland is a state that does care about issues, he suffers. And he was counting on a big African-American vote, and the polling shows right now that he's frankly not doing any better than any other Republican has done in past years within that community. So I think Ben Cardin wins. I also think the governor is thrown out, who's a Republican, and the Democratic governor candidate wins in Maryland.
So if I've got this right, have I counted this right? Are you looking at 51 Republicans to 49 Democrats?
Well, in truth, I keep saying I'm looking at 49 for sure in my mind. I think there's a pickup of four. I think there are two or three seats that are still up for grabs, and those would be Virginia, Tennessee, and one other. And I think I do believe we'll win one of those, maybe two of those.
Connecticut.
Lieberman probably wins today.
He wins today, and does he continue to be a whatever he will be when he gets elected? I'm not sure what we call him.
Well, he'll be an independent, but he'll be a Democrat, a caucus with the Democrats. Remember, Bernie Sanders in Vermont is going to win, and he's an independent, but he will caucus with the Democrats. And as long as the Democrats give Lieberman, he's made it very clear, his seniority, which they have quietly agreed to do, he will be a Democrat. He is a Democrat. I mean, I think a lot of us who are on the war issue feel strongly and feel he ran as a Democrat in the primary should take the consequences of that primary. The fact is, he ran. He's going to win with a lot of Republican help. They'll probably still give the president some support in some areas that, as a Democrat, I wouldn't like, but he will generally be with the Democrats across the board.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that with interest. I am. I know that he's probably feeling abandoned by a lot of people. It's just going to be interesting to me to see what he does from a personal standpoint. You and I think, have a difference, and I want to talk to you about it. I've read some things that you've read about term limits. You want to tell me your position on term limits?
Well, I understand why they're popular with people, but I'm a believer that, that we have term limits in this country today, and they're called elections. And I am an absolute believer that if the American public, the voting public, Republican or Democrat, doesn't want somebody in office, then they should throw them out electorally. We shouldn't have some artificial timetable that says after 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, you can no longer run. There's something to be said about the wisdom you gain from being in office. There's something to be said about the information that the complexities of our government are so great, the understanding of budgets and of just the various issues that permeate the Congress. You know, 20, 25,000 pieces of legislation are introduced every year in the Congress. About 1,000 make it to the floor of Congress, and even though they have staffs, you've got to be briefed, you've got to understand them. If you're rural, you got to learn about mass transit. If you're mass transit, if you're a city, you got to learn about farming subsidies. All the things you have to learn, it takes time. And I've always believed that term limits are just some artificial system. And frankly, they were put in to throw out. I mean, originally it was Republicans who primarily supported the term limits back in the 90s to get rid of Democrats. That was one way to throw them out of office. And the minute they threw them out of office, they've quietly said, well, maybe we don't need term limits. I think everybody would like term limits to get rid of the people they don't like there now. But the reality is I just believe term limits are an artificial system, and I think we have them, and they're called elections.
Well, I agree with you in that regard, but what about the overwhelming power that an incumbent has? Maybe we've got an incumbent, for example, that needs to go. And it's so difficult to move them out of office. So the power of the incumbency is just so strong. What about that?
Well, there's no question. That's the reality that I think wives, a number of people early on supported term limits in the 90s. Ralph Nader, I remember, used to say that all he wanted was term limits for one cycle because it would get rid of these chairmen that he thought were so bad Democrats, and then he'd get rid of term limits. It is tough, but maybe that's what we have to work on, is how do we balance a system that allows challengers to have an equal footing? I mean, maybe that's what we should be talking about, whether it's giving free mailing, whether it's giving free television, whether it's a campaign. I mean, something that would put candidates on an equal footing, or give candidates some kind of equal footing. The very fact that, I mean, there is an imbalance. If you're an incumbent and you're serving your community, and let's, you know, we always think of the bums, but let's think of the good members of Congress that are doing a terrific job, then they do have a leg up. I mean, they've been there, they go to the meetings, they talk to the town halls, they talk to the residents, they service the constituents. Why wouldn't you want those people back?
Yeah, the really good ones, and there are some. Let me ask you a question. Is your office on K Street?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Yes,
well,
it is.
Well, I've often made the comment, and I won't hide it from you. I've often made the comment that perhaps a good thing to help straighten some of this out would be to take a couple of D9 Caterpillars down K Street. What about the influence of K Street on our legislators?
Well, the concept is, whether it's K Street or the influence of lobbyists in general, is wrong, but it speaks to the influence of money, whether they're, whatever you call them, lobbyists, corporate entities, the unions, who I think are wonderful.
You're a big union man, right?
I'm a big union man. But, I mean, the fact that money has become such a powerful and important factor, and if you're a member of Congress having to raise, not, you know, 5,000, but 50,000, 500,000, a million, you're going to listen to those people that are giving you the money. Now, it's a chicken and egg. No one's going to give you the money to support your candidacy if they don't believe you're already supportive of their position. I don't think most members of Congress, I don't think there's virtually many, there may be a handful, that sell their votes per se. I mean, you know, you go and support somebody that supports you. That works two ways. But clearly, the average citizen does not have the same clout, the same access, the same ability to influence the process as somebody who's writing a check for $5,000 or $10,000.
And I don't know how we get to that point. I really don't know how we ever get to the point where you and I are, well, you're different, but
so. No, you're saying it the right way, where the average citizen can have a say. I don't either, except if we really, and maybe it is everyone talks about it, we don't need another study, but maybe it is really a time where bipartisanly a group of people get together and talk about how do we change the system we have, not the electoral system, but the process. I mean, there are ways to bring some balance, to give chance. I mean, some states have done it by limiting what you can spend in a race, especially statewide, not federal offices, but you can only spend so much in a mayor's race or a governor's race. You can only put so much of your own money in. You can only, you know, raise so much from individuals. There are a number of things we could do in a system that would lessen the influence of money, but what we don't want to do is squelch the ability of people to get information. And right now it costs money to get your message out.
Yeah, just that some of the money's getting to be obscene.
Yes.
Just absolutely obscene.
Yes, it is.
Have one of my listeners wants me to ask you, do you think we're facing honest elections this year?
Boy, I hope so. You know, I hope that every cycle. And I'm, I never want to think that. That's the one thing about this country. I mean, I still get goose pimples about. We are a democracy. We're free. I'm so proud when I go vote. I just happen to vote absentee because I'm going to be out of the city on election day. And boy, I get excited when I vote. And I don't want to think that my one vote is going to be distorted by some process. So I hope they're honest elections. Do I expect in some places that there's going to be some, hanky-panky, sure. I mean, we're a system with human beings, and there are human beings that do things. But I think across the board, I hope it's an honest system. And I want to believe it. I have to believe it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in this process.
Well, yeah. It's tough to remain a voter if you believe that you couldn't eventually have honest elections. I know there has been hanky-panky over the years, and a lot of folks are worried about it this time around. But we shall see. there's going to be a lot of close races, so there's probably going to be a lot of allegations. I think we're probably facing more close elections than maybe we've had in a long time. Am I way off base there?
No, I think that's probably correct. I think that there'll be a lot of close races. I think the one thing, though, I think people, and I think it's Republicans in particular, hoping for close races. I think there's also going to be some blowouts that no one's expected. I think there's going to be some early wins, bigger wins. I think we're going to know early in the evening of election night the trend in this country. But clearly, with the amount of money being spent, with the amount of effort being put out, there's going to be a number of House seats, maybe some Senate seats, some governor seats that are by a few thousand votes one way or the other, and it may be the absentee ballots that are going to take a few days to count before we actually get the results.
And, and one other thing, we've had some of these races that you mentioned a little earlier. Some of these races have tightened up. Some of them have spread. We've got one in Florida here that's very, very interesting. I can't think of the district number right now, but it's Tom Feeney's district. And we've got a guy over there running that has received, that's pulled up within 2 points and gotten not a dime from the DNC, not a dime from the Florida Democratic Party. And it's interesting how we've done this year with Rahm Emanuel being out and, deciding who is and who isn't going to get a helping hand. And I don't know. I worry about that situation.
Well, I understand, and Rahm Emanuel has been the iron fist of this party driving it this cycle in the House, and there'll be, many kudos if the results are the way they look like they're going to be, that the Democrats take back the House. There'll be many knives out for him if we don't take back the House. And even if we take back the House, there's going to be a lot of second-guessing Monday morning quarterbacking of, well, shouldn't he have done something here and shouldn't he have done something there? I mean, what's happened in this race, there's going to be a number of Democrats, frankly, who are going to do much better than anyone ever anticipated. I don't know the district you're talking about in particular. What part of the state is it?
It's over on the East Coast, just right above Miami there. It's Feeney. Tom Feeney's, is somebody we'd really love to knock off.
Yeah, I would guess, that the concentration in Florida, of course, has been the Foley seat and then to some extent the Clay Shaw seat. And I think there's a couple others that have been very visible. But most of the races, again, because of the limited amount of, even though there's been obscene amount of money, because of the limited amount of dollars and because of the number of races, again, I'll say, that have become open. I mean, we started this cycle with most of the prognosticators, the Charlie Cooks, the Stu Rothenbergers, who, really do this as a living, bipartisan, what races are open, aren't, talking about 15 to 18 seats that were really toss-ups. Then they went to 25. Then they went to 30. We're at about 59 seats today that they claim are in play, that either party could capture. That is just unheard of, and will probably, when all is said and done, be closer to 75 or 80 seats, and the one you're talking about could be one of those that, just for a few thousand dollars more, depending on what happens, maybe if he doesn't win, maybe the Democrat could have won.
Yeah, well, it's like you say, there's going to be a genius and there's going to be a goat after this election.
That's correct.
I'm hoping Carl is the goat.
Yes.
Love to see that. Vic, your website is simply victorcamber.com.
That's correct.
And I want to let everybody know there's some great reading on there. And, victorcamber.com, we will post that. Vic, I want to thank you so much for being on the program.
It's my pleasure, and anytime I can, I'd love to do it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Vic Camber. And he's a guy I just really respect his opinion on many, many things. We don't agree on everything, but we agree on a lot. And we can never expect. God, how many friends would you have if you had to agree on 100% of everything with him? Not very many. I saw somebody last night that reminded me of that. And I think it was Steele who's running against Menendez up there, who said that Ronald. Now I remember. He said Ronald Reagan said if you agree with somebody 80% of the time, you can be good friends. And I guess that's the way I feel about it. But the money, the K Street thing, I'd like to see that reduced. And I am for term limits. I wouldn't mind it so much if we could do something about this power of incumbency. Anyway, hey, we're going to pause for a quick break and. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
A statement by or on behalf of George Bush. Brought to you in the interest of fairness or in the public interest.
If you vote for the Democrats and the Democrats win, what does that mean? It means the terrorists win and America loses. They're saying we don't have a plan for victory. You know what? We don't need a plan for victory. And you know why? Because we're already winning. Absolutely, we're winning. I'm the winningest president in history, and I've been winning for 3.5 years straight. So don't vote for the terrorists on November 7th. Vote for America. Vote for alternative interrogation techniques. It's a no-brainer. Vote for moving beyond quaint historical pieces of paper like the Constitution and that Geneva Convention. Vote for making things better by dismantling unnecessary civil liberties. Vote for balancing the budget by extending tax cuts. Vote for absolute power for the president. I promise to prove over the next 2 years that I am not yet corrupted absolutely. It's good to be the king, to kiss my ring, line up on the left, to kiss my ass, line up on the right. I'm George W. Bush, and I thoroughly disapprove of democracy.
This is Granny B, and I was just thinking about the economy. Who's doing well and who isn't? President Bush has been going around campaigning on how great the economy is. He says, look at all these great numbers. The stock market's up, unemployment's down. So everything's hunky-dory, right? Why don't people get that? Maybe it's because Sam, who's the butcher at the supermarket, hasn't had much of a raise in years. Maybe it's because Betty, who owns a big hair boutique, is losing business to the chain hair cutter that moved into town. And maybe it's because some of the people here in Crossroads who have lost their jobs have just quit looking because they can't find a new one. What with all those advisors the president has up in Washington, D.C., couldn't some of them be telling him what's going on out here in the real world? This is Granny B, and I was just wondering.
Have you had enough
of hypocrisy?
Have you had enough
of the splendid spree?
Have you had enough? Does it make you want to scream and shout?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Have you had enough
of the rubber stamp?
Have you had enough
of the wire tabs?
If you've had enough, then John Doolittle is out.
You know we've let them take the test too long. They got all the answers wrong. No plan, no shade, no oversight.
Now's the time to put it right.
Have you had enough? 'Cause they're all corrupt.
Have you had enough?
Or be a dividend.
Have you had enough? Then John Doolittle is out.
Well, 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 I noticed on the chat room that you're talking about our esteemed vice president, Cheney, the psychopathic liar. I found it really interesting, so interesting that Mr. Cheney is again making baseless claims that insurgents are timing the attacks to influence the elections. And in an interview with Fox, Vice President Dick Cheney said, "It's my belief that Iraqi insurgents are very sensitive to the fact that we've got an election scheduled." Cheney said the insurgents believe, quote, they can break the will of the American people, and that's what they're trying to do. Well, Cheney's claim, of course, has no supporting evidence whatsoever, and here's what that dolt that occupies the Oval Office has to say about it.
There's certainly a stepped-up level of violence, and we're heading into an election.
So they're trying to influence the elections?
I don't know. I don't have any intelligence that says that.
He doesn't have any intelligence that says that. Actually, the man has no intelligence whatsoever. But it's fascinating to me what these guys will do. It's amazing what they'll do. They'll stop at nothing to win this election. They tried this same bullshit the last election. You remember that? How they said Osama bin Laden wanted John Kerry to win? Do you remember that? I don't have to tell you how important this election is. In my opinion, it's going to shape the direction of this country for probably decades to come. And if the Republicans win, I've got little doubt that this nation is going to end up in the dustbin of history, joining the Roman Empire as just another failed superpower. That is exactly what is at stake here. And why is it inevitable that we'll end up as a failed nation? Because of George W. Bush. Do not forget that. But you say, oh, Guy, this is an election, by and large, for congressional seats. And it is. However, I think it's a whole lot more than that. I think it's a referendum on George W. Bush and his policies and the direction this country will be taken for the next 2 years and maybe decades to come. And let's face it, two more years traveling in the direction we're taking right now will be an unmitigated disaster for this nation. So let's stop and think, and let's tell everybody we know, everybody that we talk to between now and next Tuesday, let's consider what this election is really about. Forget the congressman's name that's running. Forget the senator's name that's running. This is about George Bush and little else. Why just George Bush? Because this Republican Congress has done nearly nothing without the George Bush seal of approval. They've rubber stamped nearly everything that he sent to them. They've had no initiatives themselves. They've acted only upon the Bush ideological agenda, which has put this country on a certain road to ruin, one that you can bet on will ruin us. They've marched to the drumbeat of whatever is sent to them from the office of Karl Rove. And if you doubt what I've said here, please do remember that it was Dick Cheney, not so long ago, who referred to congressional members as gnats. That is what they think of the Congress of the United States. It's as though they didn't even exist. The Congress could have spent their entire session at home, for that matter, debating flag burning and gay marriage. What the hell did that have to do with anything? Nothing. I'm a student of history, and I know many of you are too. It's impossible to find a Congress in our nation's history that's been worse than this one. And Dennis Hastert and Bill Frist must be so proud. So really, the Republican congressmen running for re-election are joined at the hip at George W. Bush. And they've avoided him like the plague. But they can't escape the fact that all of them ran on his record. All of them have gone along with whatever he's wanted from them. All of them share his radical neocon ideology, him and Karl Rove and Dick Cheney's. All of them are responsible for this debacle in Iraq and our lack of security here at home and the almost total abandonment of the middle working class in this country. All of them are responsible for the tax cuts for the rich while just laughing at those who requested a modest raise in the minimum wage for the struggling wage earners. There's not a single Republican congressman, not one, who can claim any kind of independence from this administration. Not one. Think about that. Not one. They've willingly helped him take away some of the freedoms that we have and our right to privacy. They've helped him make this nation the scourge of the world by laughing at the bounds of decency of the Geneva Convention and approving torture tactics by our intelligence agency. So when you see any of the Republicans, and I mean any of them, any Republican congressmen and women running ads on TV saying that they believe this or that they've done one thing or another as your congressperson, don't you believe it for one moment. It's horse manure. None of the Republican Congress critters has had the guts to oppose this administration on anything. They have willingly gone along with Bush on all of his misguided military adventures, his disastrous economic policies, his total disdain for any sort of cogent foreign policy, a foreign policy disaster. God only knows how many years it's going to take to recover from that. Every single Republican running for re-election should be made to be seen standing side by side embracing George Bush, for that is exactly what they've done. When Republicans go to the polls, they should be voting not for George Allen, not for Jim Talent, not for Corker, DeWine, and the rest. They should be voting for whether or not they approve of George W. Bush. Oh, how they've run away from him. But they cannot. They're joined at the hip. This Bush war is a total failure. There is no other way to put it. It'll go down in history as the most ill-advised military and political disaster in our country's history. The constant dancing and positioning by this administration concerning this issue should be enough for anyone to understand that it's a failure of historic proportions. Donald Rumsfeld, for God's sake. Donald Rumsfeld is without a doubt the worst failure of anyone to ever occupy the office of Secretary of Defense, perhaps the worst public servant we have ever had in this nation. I cannot think of a worse one. I'd rather have Duke Cunningham running this Department of Defense than I would Donald Rumsfeld. I mean that. He's arrogant, he's stubborn, he's egotistical, and his policies and decisions have been devastating to our military. And then what Boner said the other day is the best one we've had in 25 years. What the hell was he thinking? You know, when you stop and think about it, it's hard to imagine that we couldn't have just flipped a coin. Or hell, you used a Ouija board to come up with a better strategy for this war. And the fact that Rumsfeld, despite his massive failures, is still our Secretary of Defense is the best testimony I can give you to the unbelievable stupidity of George W. Bush. The right-wing talkers are so very fond of saying that we on the left hate George Bush. Well, I don't know the man. I've never met him. From what I've seen and heard of him, I don't think he's the type of guy I'd want anything to do with. So I don't hate him. I do, however, hate what he's done to this country. It's hard to look past the awful consequences of his presidency. And it's hard to look past the fact that his 6+ years have so drastically diminished the standing of this country in the world community. And one of the real mysteries is that this administration and the neocons within it and their followers don't seem to give a damn whether or not we're accepted by the rest of the world. They don't care if the rest of the world hates us because they're convinced all we need to do is wield our terrible swift sword and the rest of the world will bend to our demands. Well, that might work for a while longer. But sooner or later, the bully on the block gets his ass kicked by those he's bullied in the past. None may be able to do it by themselves, but together, the kids who've been bullied become a force. And I doubt we as a nation would be able to withstand an onslaught by the, many, many nations that might band together against us now. So I'm asking everybody that votes, do remember that when you go to the polls this year, no matter who you're voting for, just remember you're voting for whether or not you want to continue to allow George W. Bush and Dick Cheney to have the way with your Congress. And when you walk into that voting booth a week from today, a vote against any Republican is a vote for America. Any of them. Oh, well, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I just got a couple of little things to say, and then I have a question for you. First interviewer you had was talking about that Bush thinks that he was called to this purpose or whatever, which, you know, that's happened before with Hitler and so forth. But anyway, in this country, what I don't understand is all these religious leaders that basically tell him that. They really do, and then they tell the congregations because I know, I have a friend who said, well, we know that, you know, he's called by God, you know, talking about Bush. But anyway.
Well, I think.
But I think they've got a higher responsibility than even he does, that they continue to let him be deluded.
Well, deluded is the right word. And everybody's got to understand that the religious right in this country and Lord knows, I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about the religious right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They've got two or three issues they want to get done no matter what, and they're willing to sell their souls to do it.
Yeah.
And they have sold their souls to do it.
Yeah, I believe they have too. Yeah, I really believe that. And another thing, is there some way that someone on your program could explain these amendments we have to vote for? I can only understand about one of them.
Oh, in the, you mean the state, in the state of Florida? Well, I'll see if I can do something about that on Thursday.
Because I'm just, I even asked people in the Democratic Party over here, and they don't.
Yeah, well, it's a lot. There's a lot on the ballot this time around. I'll see if Thursday I can't do something about
okay.
that.
Okay, and one more question. How do you get to see your talk, what you call it?
Oh, the chat room?
Chat room, uh-huh.
Well, you go to headonradionetwork.com.
Okay.
And you register. It's simple. You just pick a username and a password. And then you'll be able to log on there. And it just says chat room, and you can join the chat room every day.
It's just one chat room?
Yeah.
You know, as much as I've been on the computer, those chat rooms just confuse the heck out of me.
Well, this one won't. This one's pretty doggone simple. I guarantee you, it's very, very simple.
Okay. Thank you, God.
Sure.
Remember those amendments, please.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, like every place else, we've got a lot of stuff going on our ballot this time around. And I got to tell you, how many of you saw the debate last night on Chris Matthews last evening? The debate between the three gubernatorial candidates here in Florida. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the Congress, so keep that in mind. But, you know, they had Republican Charlie Crist. Oh, God. Democratic Jim Davis. And the People's Party candidate we've had on the program here a couple times, Max Lynn. And the Republicans and the Democrats tried to keep Max Lynn out of the debate, and he had to get a court order. He only found out 10 minutes before the whole thing started that he was going to get to participate. And it was obvious to me that the other two candidates wanted to keep Lynn out of the debate because he'd embarrass them, and they were right. He did. In fact, I was embarrassed by the whole thing. And I know some of you out there going, hey, what's the matter with you? It's hard for me to imagine two more pathetic candidates for a large, important state like Florida as Crist and Davis. And I got to tell you, and I've heard it, I've been kicked in the ass by Democrats for saying this, but as a Democrat, I'm ashamed of our candidate. Davis is weak. He's indecisive. He's a totally failed congressman. I wouldn't vote for him as a dog catcher. And Crist is even worse. He gives the entire Bush family, Matthews asked him last night, to rate Jeb Bush and rate the president. And Crist gives the, and that's the way he put it, I give the entire Bush family an A rating, in his words, for all they've done for America. God damn, that one made me want to throw up. And Davis gave Jeb Bush a B rating, even though we've had a school system rated amongst the two worst in the entire country. Yes, despite Jebby's FCAT test, which are a total failure. And even though the Republicans have allowed the insurance company to financially rape the citizens of Florida, Charlie Crist himself has received about $750,000 from the insurance industry, while we're seeing premiums doubled, tripled, and in many cases quadrupled, and even more. People are starting to bail out of Florida at a record pace. Did you know that? And it's because of those thieves. And Crist, as Attorney General, has done not a damn thing to stop them, the insurance business. Davis, I can't say one good thing about him. He helped sponsor and pass the bankruptcy bill. That alone is enough to disqualify him as a Democratic candidate in my book. So my vote, even as a yellow dog Democrat, and I may be a little less yellow, has gone to Max Lynn, the People's Party candidate. I'd love to vote for a Democrat for our state house if we had an actual Democrat running for that office, but we do not. Oh, it's hard. It's hard, and I hate that. I really do hate that. I hate that. We could talk about that for a long time. We could really talk about that one for a long time. Here we are. We got Clint Curtis over there fighting it out with one of the most hard-nosed, hard-to-beat Republicans in the Congress. Doesn't get a dime from the Democrats. Not a dime. Not a dime for the DNC. Not a dime for the Florida Republican Party. I think it's shameful. It's just absolutely shameful. You got time for one more quick call, maybe. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. That's so many things we could have talked about today, how the Iraqi government is now embarrassing the George Bush administration. John Kerry. Let's talk about that. A lot of people jumping on John Kerry today for saying something. I'm not going to jump on him. I'm proud of him. I'm proud that he said something, finally. I've been very critical of John Kerry. I was very critical of him after the election the last time for not standing up for himself. And during the election for not standing up for himself against those swift boat veterans for truth sons of bitches. But Kerry has come out today and says, I'm not going to be lectured by a stuffed suit White House mouthpiece standing behind a podium, or doughy Rush Limbaugh, who no doubt today will take a break from belittling Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease to start lying about me, just as they've lied about Iraq. It disgusts me that these Republican hacks who have never worn the uniform of our country lie and distort so blatantly and carelessly about those who have. Thank you, John Kerry. Thank you for saying that. Many of us appreciate that very much. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, listen, did you happen to catch on C-SPAN on Sunday with Seymour Hersh and Scott Ritter?
No, I did not.
I got a website for you. It's New York Sound Posse. Four words, you type it in, and they got some real good events that they hold, and it's all webcast, so you can download it and listen to it.
Well, and I like Cy Hersh, and of course we've had Scott on the program. Been a while. He's been a little tough to get a hold of lately. I don't know why, but we used to be able to call him all the time, but lately he's been out. But couple of smart guys right there. I love Cy Hersh. I really do.
This is it's about an hour and a half, and they take Mostly they just talk to each other and ask each other questions, and then they take a few questions from the audience. But I listened to it twice in a row. Was that good?
Hmm.
And it was held October the 17th, so it's pretty recent.
Yeah.
And he's not so upbeat. He said what Scott Ritter said was, if you like George Bush as president, you're going to love him as a lame duck president. And he was talking about what he thinks is going to happen with Iran. And from the way Scott Ritter talked, it's a done deal.
Yeah, it's taking place a little later than Scott first predicted.
Yeah.
But political things have happened and, you know, have put it off. But I think it's inevitable. If Bush stays in office and if he gets the Congress to go along with him.
A lot of ifs there, Guy.
Man, aren't there a lot of ifs right now? Oh, man.
You got a chance to catch it. I'm going to let you go, Guy.
Okay.
Got a chance to catch it. And for your listeners, New York Sound Posse.
All right.
And there's a bunch of stuff on there.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care, Guy.
Yeah, it's one of those woulda, shoulda, coulda times of year right now. There are candidates all over this country that are going to be doing woulda, shoulda, coulda, if only if I had done this. If there's going to be a lot of ifs, there's going to be a lot of soul searching. I'll tell you what, I hope the soul searching's over. I hope people like Corker, who, and Mike DeWine, by the way, and everybody that stood for those dirty ads that the Republicans have run, I hope they're sorry when this is all over. I hope they learn a lesson that maybe, You can be negative, but when you get too far down in the gutter, that it'll turn on you. And I sure hope that it does on some of these people. I admired Ford the other day. I don't know how he can do it. He must be a lot more even tempered than I am. They asked him if he thought that ad was racist, and he said no. Now I don't think he's being honest with us right there, and he should have been. But I understand why he wasn't. He didn't want to look like a sore loser or anything like that. But I hope he can pull this out. But I kind of agree with Vic. I kind of agree. Was it Vic or Glenn who said that the polls in Tennessee might be somewhat skewed because people might tell a pollster in person that race wouldn't be a part of their vote? But it actually is. Isn't that a shame? Isn't that just a damn shame that in this day and age that we're talking about that? It disgusts me. It really does. Well, I had a lot of other things I was going to do today, but never got around to them. I guess we'll just have to wait till tomorrow. Hope you all have a happy Halloween today. You're going to have lots of trick-or-treaters tonight, although that's way off from what it used to be, isn't it? when I think back to when I was a child and we went trick-or-treating, what a happy, fun thing it was to do, and now people actually have to worry about their kids' safety. My God. My God. I don't know. Well, hey, I do want to thank you for listening to the program today. I made a note here to myself to please remind everybody that this is a listener-supported program, and sometimes the cookie jar gets a little empty, if you know what I mean. And it's kind of got a hollow sound to it right now. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. We've got a lot of good programming coming your way. We've got Bob Kincaid coming up at 7. Bob's one of the real good guys, and liberal progressive radio. I'm sure many of you discovered that. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.